Osho, The Dhammapada, The Way of the Buddha, Volume 8, Discourse Number 3.
Bhagwan, while a man desires a woman, his mind is bound as closely as a calf to its mother. As you would pluck an autumn lily, pluck the arrow of desire. For he who is awake has shown you the way of peace. Give yourself to the journey. Here shall I make my dwelling in the summer and the winter and in the rainy season. So the fool makes his plans, sparing not a thought for his death. Death overtakes the man who, giddy and distracted by the world, cares only for his flocks and his children. Death fetches him away as a flood carries off a sleeping village. His family cannot save him, not his father, nor his sons. Know this, seek wisdom and purity. Quickly clear the way.
Nirabo asked just the other day, "Is Jesus Christ coming back soon to earth as he had promised?" Such nonsense questions go on in people's mind. And not only in the minds of ordinary common people, but the so-called religious, theological, philosophical intelligentsia too keeps itself involved into such absurdities. Christ is not a person. It is an experience. Jesus had it. You can have it. Christ is synonymous with Buddha. What we call in the East the Buddha, the awakened, the West has called Christ the crowned one. Jesus Christ cannot come back. But you can become Christ any moment. Christ is already hidden in you as a seed. You are all bodhisattvas, Buddhas in essence, in seed. Just a little effort, a little understanding, and you can bloom and your fragrance can be released. Jesus bloomed, Buddha bloomed, so can you. Why wait for Jesus Christ's coming? That is avoiding the fundamental quest. Why not become one? What is the point of waiting for somebody else to come and deliver you? And how anybody else can deliver you? And the deliverance that will come from somebody else will not be much of a deliverance. Freedom has to be earned. It cannot be given. If it is given, it can be taken away. If it is given, it is not yours. It is not your growth. And anything that is given to you remains only an accumulation on the outside. it never becomes part of your interiority. Hence Buddha says, know this, seek wisdom and purity, quickly clear the way, don't waste time in unnecessary things. Nirvo, are you cuckoo or something? Why waste for Jesus Christ what wrong he has done to you? Enough is enough. Poor man came once and you crucified him. Now you are hankering again to crucify him or what? The Pope came before the gathering of cardinals. Rumors had spread as to the reason for this extraordinary meeting. Beloved cardinals, the Pope began, I have called this special session to announce incredible news. It is, however, good news and bad news. As to the good, I have personally received a phone call from the Lord Jesus Christ. He has arrived on earth and has returned to fulfill his word. The cardinals cheered and applauded. The bad news, the Pope continued, is that he called from 17 Koregaon Park, Pune, India. Why you are waiting for Jesus Christ? He is already here. He has always been here in the awakened ones. And the world has never missed the awakened ones. Yes, far and few in between they have been. But it is because of them the earth has still significance. It is because of them the earth is not yet dead. It is because of those few flowers that the earth has still the perfume of the beyond, that the earth has salt. Otherwise, the crowds are dead. If you look at the crowds, the earth is a big cemetery. Only these few people, a Zarathustra, a Jesus, a Lao Tzu, a Buddha, a Kabir, a Nanak, these people who can be counted on fingers, they keep the flame burning. But you can become the flame any moment. Your heart is ready to burst into a flame. But rather than looking inwards, you go on looking outwards, waiting for Jesus Christ. Rather than searching in, you go on searching in the scriptures, in mere words. Rather than transforming your state in which you are, you go on hoping that some miracle will happen and everything will be good. These hopes are not going to help you. These hopes are deceptive, dangerous, suicidal. The first sutra, Buddha says, while a man desires a woman, his mind is bound as closely as a calf to its mother. One thing very significant has to be understood before we enter into this sutra. In Sanskrit, we use the word kama both for desire as such and for sexual desire. The same word is used for both. And there is a reason why the same word is used for both. To desire a woman or a man, or to desire at all, both are expressed by the same word, kama. The reason is very psychological, profound. Sanskrit is one of the most profoundest languages on the earth. Very deliberately evolved. That's exactly the meaning of the word Sanskrit. Sanskrit means consciously refined, consciously evolved. In India, two languages have existed in the past. One was called Prakrit. Prakrit means the natural. Unevolved, raw, crude, used by the people. And the other was called Sanskrit. Sanskrit means refined, cultured, evolved. Deliberately. That was used only by the intelligentsia, by the Brahmins. Hence, Sanskrit has many significant clues. It is rooted in great insights. For example, this same word being used for both desire as such and for sexual desire has a tremendously important message in it. All desire is basically sexual desire. That is the message in it. Desire as such has the flavor of sexuality in it. And you can observe it. This understanding is based, rooted in great observation. A man who is mad after money, watch his behavior, his being, look into his eyes, and you will be surprised that he loves money in the same way somebody else loves a woman or a man. Now, psychologists have performed few experiments. They have made few cards, 100 cards, ordinary playing cards. Just 2-3 cards are there inside the whole pack of naked women. They give you the whole pack, shuffled in such a way that the psychologist himself is not aware where are the cards which contain the naked pictures of women. But he goes on watching the eyes of the person who is looking at the cards. He goes on looking at cards. When he comes to a naked woman, suddenly his eyes change. His pupils become big. That is automatic. He is not aware what is happening. But immediately his pupils become so big, they want to take the naked woman in as much as possible. They open all the doors. The same happens with people who are mad after money, money maniacs. Seeing a 100-rupee note, their pupils become immediately big. They may not be interested in a woman. And women are aware of it. Hence so many ornaments, beautiful saris and all kinds of arrangements for these foolish people. They may not look at the face of the woman, but they will be immediately interested in her necklace. They may be immediately interested in her earrings, her hair clip, if it has a diamond, big diamond. They become interested in the diamond, and via the diamond they become interested in the woman. Their sexuality has become perverted. It has become focused on money. And so is the case with power-hungry people, those who are after political power, those who want to become presidents and prime ministers and governors. Just seeing the chair of the prime minister is enough, and their whole being is in a state of ecstasy, in a state of orgasmic joy. Just seeing is enough. That is their goal. Buddha is right to use the same word for both. Hence the misunderstanding in translation. The translator has thought that he is talking about women. So he translates kama as while a man desires a woman. His mind is bound as closely as a calf to its mother. In fact, Buddha does not mention the woman. What he is trying to say is, while a man desires, his mind is bound as closely as a calf to its mother. Any desire is a bondage. Desire as such is a bondage. Because when you desire, you become dependent on the other, on the desired object. Whether it is woman, money, man, power, prestige, it does not matter what it is. Desire, and desire brings bondage. Why? It is simple. When you desire something, your joy depends on that something. If it is taken away, you are miserable. If it is given to you, you are happy. But only for the moment. That too has to be understood. Whenever your desire is fulfilled, it is only for the moment that you feel joy. It is fleeting. Because once you have got it, again the mind starts desiring for more, for something else. Mind exists in desiring. Hence mind can never leave you without desire. If you are without desire, mind dies immediately. That's the whole secret of meditation. Create desirelessness, and mind is gone. Gone forever, never to return back. If desire is there, mind will come. Desire is the root from where the mind comes in. Desire is its nourishment, its food, its very life, its breath. So mind cannot leave you without desire. If you desire God, even God, and you meet God, it will be only for a moment that you will be ecstatic. And then suddenly the mind will say, now what? Now this goal is achieved. Project future goals. You are finished with God. Now there is no more in it. Desire fulfilled only for a moment gives you a relief. And that relief has also to be understood. Why? In the moment of a fulfilled desire, there is relief. There is relief because in that small moment, you are desireless. Desirelessness is joy. When one desire fulfills, and before the mind projects another desire, between the two, there is a small interval. When there is no desire, that moment is of meditation. That's how meditation has been discovered. It has not been speculated upon. It is not given by philosophers, by great thinkers. It is a simple observation, a scientific observation, that whenever desire is not there, you wanted a beautiful house and you have got it. And when you open the lock of the new house, for a moment you are transported into another world. For a moment there is no desire. A long, long cherished desire has been fulfilled. It will take a little time for the mind. Mind needs time, remember. Mind cannot function without time. Hence, mind creates time. Without time, there is no space for the mind to function. Mind will take a little time. In fact, mind is sogged. It was not hoping that the desire is going to be fulfilled. The goal was so far away. The house was so big, and it was almost impossible. But now that it is fulfilled, mind is in a shock. The mind is collecting itself again. While you are opening the lock of the new house and you enter into the new house, and a deep joy arises in you, you say, aha! The time that passes while you say, aha, is enough. And mind has projected another desire. The mind says, the house is beautiful, but where is the swimming pool? The house is beautiful, but the garden is not looked after. You will have to create a new garden, a beautiful swimming pool, and again the whole process sets in. Again you are in the wheel of the mind. But for a moment when there was no desire, there was joy. Joy is always when there is no desire. Whenever there is desire, joy disappears. Desire keeps you a prisoner. Hence Buddha says, while a man desires, his mind is bound. And there is not much difference between one desire and another desire. So mind is not much worried what you desire. Mind's worry is only one, that you must desire. Desire anything. You can start collecting postal stamps, that will do. But desire. Now they are useless. But there are many people who go on collecting postal stamps. I know one man who collects 5 cigarette boxes. He has such a collection. He is ready to purchase at any cost if a new cigarette pocket can be given to him. He is ready. He collects bidi labels and he goes on sowing people with such great joy as if he has conquered the world. I know another man who goes on writing in books Rama, Rama, Rama. For years he has been doing, almost 60 years, because he is 80 years old. His whole house is full of books in which only one word, Rama. And he goes on sowing and bragging. Look, how many millions of times I have written Rama. When I was a guest in his house, he showed me too. I said, you must be a fool. You wasted all these books. You should have given these books to children, poor children, they would have used them in a far better way. You have simply wasted ink, paper, your time, your life. And moreover, whenever you will come across Rama, he will hit you on your head. Because you must be continuously harassing him. Rama, Rama, Rama. Day in, day out, you go on harassing him. Avoid him. If you see Rama anywhere, escape. I ask him, do you know why he carries a bow always with him? It is for the devotees like you. He is always ready with his bow and arrow, so you cannot escape. He was shocked. He said, what are you saying? Are you joking? I have been doing a religious act. Everybody has praised it. Great saints have come and praised it. I said, those people must have been fools just like you. Mind can desire anything. Now money he is not collecting, but more and more names of Rama. It is the same game. A man went to see a lawyer about getting a divorce. How much do you charge for handling a case like mine? He asked. I really don't like to handle divorce cases, replied his attorney. Why do you want to get a divorce? Because I want to marry my wife's sister. No, a case like that could get pretty messy. It might cost you as much as $1,000. Why don't you go home and think it over? So the man went home, and the next day he called his lawyer. I have talked the whole thing over with my best friend, he said. I have decided not to get a divorce after all. That's just fine, said his lawyer. Tell me, what did your friend say that made you change your mind? Well, he tells me he has been out with my wife and her sister too, and there ain't a nickel's worth of difference between them. Every desire is the same. The objects differ. But not the quality of desiring. You desire money, somebody else desires God. You desire power, somebody else desires paradise. It is all the same. Hence, there are no religious desires, remember. Non-desiring is religious. Desiring is worldly. Desire is world. Non-desire is transcendence. But when one is under the impact of a desire, the impact is hypnotic. Every desire hypnotizes you. It makes you blind. That's why we say, we use phrases like falling in love. That is significant. The love that you know is certainly a fall from consciousness, a fall from understanding. You start crawling on the earth. You are no more in your senses. You lose your intelligence. You become stupid. The more you are full of desire and lust, the more stupid you are. Murphy's maxim. Murphy says, I believe in love at first sight because it saves time. When you are going to fall, then why wait? Fall at the first sight. At least time is saved, if nothing else. When a person is in love with someone, and by love I don't mean the love of the Buddhas, their love is totally different. They are talking about prayers. They are talking about compassion. They are talking about a desireless expression of their being. They are sharing their bliss. I am talking about your love. It is lust. It is the lowest energy phenomenon possible. You are almost in a hypnotic state. A man in love with a woman or a woman in love with a man is no more able to see clearly. The mind becomes clouded. The desire creates so much smoke. It raises so much dust that you can't see clearly. And whatsoever you see is your own projection. A young army sergeant was posted to the deserts of Arabia by the French Foreign Legion. After a few days, he became restless and asked his officer what form of entertainment took place in the camp. Where were all the women and the bars and so forth? The officer replied, "Just be patient and wait until the camels arrive." So the young sergeant waited patiently for several days more and inquired again, and the officer replied, "For heaven's sake, just wait until the camels arrive." The next night there was an almighty rush. All the soldiers came running out of their tents, yelling and screaming. The young sergeant grabbed the officer and asked, "What is going on?" "The camels are coming," replied the officer. "But why the great rush?" "Well, you don't want to get an ugly one, do you? If you are starving in a desert, even camels will start looking beautiful. Otherwise, you can't make any difference between one camel and another. But the more your desires are starved, the more blind you become." So remember, Buddha is not saying starve your desires. He has been misunderstood by people, by his own followers as much as by his enemies. That is the fate of the Buddhas, to be misunderstood by the enemies and by the friends both. When he is saying that desire makes you blind, he is not saying that repressed desire, because repressed desire is far more dangerous. He is saying, understand desire, meditate over the whole phenomenon of it, and through understanding go beyond it, not through repression. Through meditation transcend desire. Seeing that desire is misery, seeing that desire is bondage, seeing that desire drags you downwards into the hell, one simply, without any repression, is released. And to be released from desire is to be a Buddha, is to be a Christ. And the greatest mystery is that those who have desires, they live like beggars. They live in bondage, are bound to live like beggars. And those who have transcended desire live like emperors. It seems existence follows a very paradoxical law. The old Murphy says, in order to get a loan, you must first prove you don't need it. If you want a loan from a bank, prove that you don't need it. If the bank suspects you need it, you won't get it. Exactly that is the case with Dhamma, with the eternal law of existence. When you don't need anything, the whole existence is yours, the whole kingdom of God is yours. And when you need anything, nothing is yours. Only the need and the wound and the desire and the bondage. And desires are jumping upon you from every direction. there are desires and desires. It is not a question of one desire. Desiring is the same, but there are millions of desires. So you live simultaneously into millions of prisons, and they go on destroying you. They go on forcing things upon you which you would not have accepted if there had been a moment of insight, of clarity. You would not have accepted such humiliation as you accept because of desires. You would not have accepted this crawling state. You are meant to fly into the sky. You have wings. Wings which can take you to the ultimate. But desires are heavy. Like rocks, they are crushing you. And how many desires do you have? One day simply write down and count them. And you will be surprised. They go on sprouting one after another. And each desire fulfilled brings 10 more desires in. Desires don't believe in birth control. Each desire gives birth to as many desires as possible. Desires are never barren. They are never childless. Bobby Jo, a truly homely girl, came home from the Georgia campus for summer vacation. One evening, she calmly confessed to her mother that she lost her virginity last semester. "How did it happen?" gasped the parent. "Well, it was not easy," admitted Bobby Jo. "But 3 of my sorority sisters helped hold him down." Just look around how many desires are holding you down and how you are being exploited, sucked. And if you look miserable, sad, depressed, if you look weak, if you look as if life has no significance, it is not an accident. It is your own doing. You have not understood how you go on creating your own anguish, how you go on creating, feeding your own enemies. Yes, Buddha is right. While a man desires, his mind is bound. As closely as a calf to its mother. A Martian landed at a busy cross-section in New York City and spent the next 2 hours crossing the street. He kept going back and forth between the 2 electric signs that change from walk to don't walk, and then back again. Finally, the weary little Martian stopped at one of the poles and threw his arms around it. "Baby," he said, "I really do love you, but you have got to stop being such a nag." All desires are a nag. They go on nagging you. They go on forcing you. they go on goading you. You can't have a moment of rest. You can't be relaxed. Those all desires are there. Rest, relaxation is known only by those who have understood the art of being desireless. That's what Buddha is pointing at. As you would pluck an autumn lily, pluck the arrow of desire. It is an arrow. It is hurting you. It is wounding you. It is great pain. It is nothing but misery. But then why people go on desiring? Why they don't listen to the Buddhas? For the simple reason, because desires are very cunning. They go on promising you. Desires are politicians. They promise you beautiful things. Of course, those things will happen tomorrow, not today. And it seems logical. Time will be needed. 5-year plans. Within 5 years, everything will be perfectly as you would like it to be. Wait, hope, let tomorrow come, and the tomorrow never comes. Again tomorrow the same desires will be there, promising you. This has been so for so many lives. You may not remember your past lives, but you can remember your past in this life at least. This has been the case always. The desire goes on telling you tomorrow, tomorrow. Wait, be patient. And all promises are just toys to keep you occupied. The goods are never delivered. The day you become aware of this cunning game that is being played upon you by your own mind, you throw all those toys. You stop listening to the continuous promises. You start laughing at your own stupidity, at your own ridiculousness, how you have been such a fool for so long, and the desire starts disappearing. It can't befool you anymore. It is an arrow. It hurts, but you are ready to suffer the pain in the hope that tomorrow you will be repaid, rewarded. And of course, one has to pay for everything. The desire is very logical. It tries to convince you. For he who is awake has shown you the way of peace. Give yourself to the journey. Buddha says, enough is enough. You have listened to the desire for thousands of lives, and you have been moving in circles, suffering. You have not tasted anything of the joy. You have not tasted anything of the beyond. Your mouths are full of dirt. You have not tasted real nourishment, because only God can be the real nourishment.
listen to those who are awake. Even if you listen, you listen to people who are just as fast asleep as you are. Are sometimes even more asleep than you are. You can understand them because they speak in the same language. Once I was traveling in an air-conditioned compartment with three other passengers. It was really a great coincidence. I have been traveling for at least 15 years continuously. It had never happened like that. It was simply rare, unique. All the three passengers were such great snorers. First, the one on the lower berth started, and then the second started responding to him, almost answering. It was like a duet. I was surprised. Then the third started, and he was something. Those two was nothing, just learners, beginners. And they all snored in such a way as if they are answering each other. It was a great discussion. I could not sleep. For 1 hour, 2 hours I waited, and there was no way. Then I started acting, snoring as loudly, fully awake, that all the three started asking me, "Please, you are snoring too loudly." I said, "Yes, I know it. Because I am not asleep. Unless you all three stop, I am going to make this night a hell for you." But the way they were snoring was something worth witnessing. Almost like answering each other. Great messages were being passed. And they followed the general format of a dialogue. When one was snoring, the two were silent. The second will start, the other two will listen. And then the third will start, the remaining other two will be silent. They knew how to converse. You can understand people who are asleep more easily because they use the same language, the language of sleep. Florence and Emily, two pretty young housewives, arranged to have cocktails and lunch together. When they met, Emily could see that something serious was bothering her friend. "Come on, out with it. What is depressing you? I am ashamed to admit it, but I caught my husband making love." "Why let that bother you? I got mine the same way. Try to get it. Don't be all Germans. Just try to get it." No, you need something else. Two colleagues were discussing a patient. I was having great success with Mr. Green, said the first doctor. When he first came to me, he was suffering from a massive inferiority complex. He thought that he was too small, which was of course all nonsense. How did you treat this patient? Inquired the second doctor. I started out with intensive analysis and then group therapy. I convinced him that many of the world's greatest leaders were men of a small physical stature. I really hated to lose Mr. Green. What do you mean? Inquired his colleague. How did you lose him? A terrible accident, replied the physician. A pussycat ate him. Now these are your advisors now. More asleep than you are. Now the priests are being replaced by psychoanalysts. Priests were fast asleep. They used to snore, but their snoring has gone out of fashion. Now psychoanalysis and different schools of psychoanalysis. Just as there were different schools of theology, there are different schools of psychoanalysis. And you listen to their advice. They are your guides. Blinds leading other blinds. A beautiful girl was talking to her psychiatrist about her problem. It is liquor, doctor. Whenever I have a few drinks, I have a compulsion to make love to whomever I happen to be with. I see, said the doctor. Well, suppose I just mix up a couple of cocktails, then you and I sit down nice and relaxed and discuss this compulsive neurosis of yours. Listen to the awakened. Otherwise, there is no way for you. Buddha says, for he who is awake has shown you the way of peace. What is the way of peace? Understanding desire and transcending desire through understanding. Great peace descends. Because desire is turmoil. Desire is maddening. Desire keeps you neurotic. Murphy's definition of neurotic: a person who worries about things that did not happen in the past, instead of worrying about something that won't happen in the future, like normal people. So there are two types of neurotics: those who worry about the past and those who worry about the future. The world consists of these two types of neurotics. And your desire is the cause of all this neurosis. It is desire that keeps you still engaged with the past, which is no more. It is utterly foolish to waste time for that which is no more. To look backwards is absolutely meaningless. You can't go back. You can't step backwards into time, then what is the point of wasting your present time for that time which cannot be recovered back? And then there are people who are too much concerned about the future, which is not yet. And future means that which is not. Remaining concerned with that which is not, whether it is past or future, is utterly ridiculous. But desire keeps you. Unfulfilled desire in the past keeps you engaged there. Hopes of fulfilling desires tomorrow keep you engaged in the future. Only a desireless person lives in the present. And those who live in the present, only they are alive. Others are dead. For who is awake has shown you the way of peace. Give yourself to the journey. Listen to the awakened ones. And they are pointing you towards a tremendous journey. Journey into truth. Journey into awareness. Journey into bliss. Journey into peace. Journey into God. Journey into nirvana. Here shall I make my dwelling in the summer and the winter and in the rainy season. So the fool makes his plans, sparing not a thought for his death. It is desire that keeps you clouded and does not allow you to see death, which is approaching every moment closer and closer. Buddha says, the fool goes on thinking, here shall I make my dwelling in the summer and the winter and in the rainy season. And he is not aware, maybe next moment he will be gone, like a soap bubble. And there may not be any more summer, any more winter, any more rainy season. But he is too much concerned of making dwellings. Dwellings on the earth? Homes on the earth? Stay here, but remember, you are in a caravanserai, and overnight stay, and in the morning we go. Don't be foolish. And even if you can make a house for the winter, another house for the summer, another house for the rainy season. Buddha must have remembered this, because his father had made 3 palaces for him in different places, in different climates. For the summer, 1 palace must have been on a higher altitude, somewhere in the Himalayas, so he could live without the torture of summer, and another house for winter in some warm climate, and another house for rainy season. He must have remembered that, but he renounced all that for the search of that which is deathless, wasting your time in these palaces, and death is coming closer, and death will take you away. Even if you can manage to have all that you desire, mind will not be satisfied. In the first place, you will not be able to manage it, because mind desires impossible things. But even if you can manage, you will not be satisfied. Old Mrs. Abramson stood at the wailing wall, hysterically crying and pounding the bricks. A tourist walked over to her and said, "Madam, there is no need for you to cry. The Jews now have a homeland, a place to go to. After 2,000 years, you finally have the country you have always wanted. Good heavens, why are you crying?" The old lady said, "I want to go to Miami Beach." And when she was on the Miami Beach, she wanted to go to Israel. That's how the mind functions. It is never satisfied. It knows no contentment. It will always find some fault. It will always find some cause to be tense. Once a tightrope walker wanted to put together an act nobody had ever seen before. He had a rope stretched across the Grand Canyon, refused a net, had himself blindfolded, and then announced he would walk across the rope playing the Blue Danube Waltz on a violin. Needless to say, a huge crowd gathered to see this performance, but as he approached the far side of the canyon, this is the conversation he overheard. "Now, admit it, Harry, have you ever seen anything like that in your whole life? Is not he amazing? Is not he incredible?" "Okay, I admit it," said Harry. "He is amazing. He is incredible. But I will tell you one thing he is not." "And what is that?" asked his wife. "He faiths he is not." This is the way of the mind. It can't be satisfied. It is impossible to satisfy it. It is a great fault finder. It is a great inventor of misery. So whether you succeed or you fail, you will remain in misery if you remain with the mind. And the way to remain with the mind is desire. Desire is the glue that keeps you with the mind. Unglue yourself from the mind. Become desireless. But when I say become desireless, I am not saying let this become your goal. I am not saying that now you have to make efforts to be desireless. I am not saying make this your desire of becoming a desireless person. No, not at all. Otherwise, you would have misunderstood the whole point. Try to understand the desire and all its miseries and all its futilities. And in that very understanding is transcendence. Death overtakes the man who, giddy and distracted by the world, cares only for his flocks and his children. Death fetches him away as a flood carries off a sleeping village. Remember death. Remember death always. Never forget death for a single moment. Why? Why Buddha is so much interested in death? For the simple reason that it is only death that can keep you aware. If you forget death, you will become immediately unconscious. It is because of death that only man can become enlightened, no other animal. Because no other animal is aware of death. It is only man who is aware of death. Let this awareness become more and more penetrating. Let it sink in your heart. So it remains there like a thorn, continuously reminding you that life is a sifting sand. That don't make your house here. Remember, death is coming, and whatsoever you do will be undone by death. So what is the point becoming so much worried, becoming so much concerned, remaining in such anxiety when death is going to take everything away? Despite warnings from his guide, an American Jew skiing in Switzerland got separated from his group and fell uninjured into a deep crevice. Several hours later, a rescue party found the yawning pit, and to reassure the stranded skier, shouted down to him, "We are from the Red Cross." "Sorry," the imperturbable Jew echoed back, "I already gave at the office." The Jew is a Jew, even he has fallen into a deep pit, and the danger of death is all around. But he is more interested in saving a little money. Just hearing the name Red Cross reminds him only of one thing: they must have come for donations. T.S. Eliot has written these beautiful lines: "Where is the life we have lost in living? Where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge we have lost in information? The cycles of heaven in 20 centuries bring us farther from God and nearer to the dust. What has happened to us? Why we have lost sight of God? Not only that we have lost sight of God, we have declared with Friedrich Nietzsche that God is dead. Why so many people are against God? And even those who are not against are not far, remember. They are neutrals. And those who are far are only formally far. They are not truly far. They can't commit their life in the search for God. What has happened to the modern man? One thing has happened. We have been able to become more and more forgetful of death. The great advancement in medical sciences has given us a hope, as if we are going to live forever. Medical science has certainly helped us to live a little longer than before. But that simply means a little longer. the same misery, the same desire, the same lust, the same bondage. Medical science may be able, it seems very possible now, that man may start living more than 100 years. There are people who think that man can live at least 300 years very easily. But what is the point? Whether you live 70 years or 700 years, you will be the same stupid man. In fact, in 700 years, your stupidity will grow very much. And if death is postponed for 700 years, who cares? It is not going to happen soon. And man does not have that much insight to look that far. We live surrounded by small things. We see only so far, just a little bit ahead, enough to walk. 700 years, that will make religion disappear from the earth, because man is not so intelligent that he can be aware of death. If death is postponed for 700 years, he is not even intelligent enough to see it after 70 years. Not even after 7 years. I have seen people who are 70 and yet not interested in meditation. It's strange, very strange. I can't believe it. A man of 70 is not still interested in meditation. That simply means he has not yet been able to see death. And death is very close. Any moment it can happen. Buddha wants you to remember death continuously. Don't think that he is a pessimist. Don't think that he is death obsessed. No, not at all. He simply wants you to remember death so that the sword of death hanging on you keeps you aware, alert. It happened once. A sannyasin was sent by his master to the court of the great king Janak. The sannyasin was a little puzzled. He said, "Why? I should go to the court of the king." The master said, "You have to learn one thing, and you can learn it more easily there than anywhere else. Hence I am sending you. Go and watch and be very alert. You are going to be enriched tremendously." The sannyasin was not convinced. Remaining with such a great master, if he cannot learn something, then how he can learn in the court of the king? And he used to think the king a fool, because he has so many possessions, such a big kingdom, and he had renounced all. He had always thought himself holier than the king. Now going to the king to learn something, he felt a little insulted. But when the master was saying, he had to go. So he went, reluctantly, deep down resisting, but he went. And when he reached to the king's court, he was shocked. In a way, his doubts were confirmed. The king was sitting, drinking wine. Beautiful women, almost naked, were dancing around. And all the courtiers were there, completely drunk. The sannyasin thought, what kind of a lesson I have to learn from these fools. When he thought this, Janak started laughing. He said, why are you laughing? Janak said, I am laughing because your old man knows something, he understands something, but you don't believe in him. You don't believe in your master. You have come, but reluctantly. He was surprised how Janak had come to know this. He asked, you seem to be almost drunk, and still you can understand, and I have not said anything. Janak said, about this wine we will talk later on. Right now you do one thing, otherwise I am going to kill you. He ordered his soldiers to take their swords out of their seats and surround the court and give to the sannyasin a cup full of milk, so full that it cannot contain even a single drop more. And he told to the sannyasin, put this cup on your head and go around the court 7 times. If even a single drop of the oil falls, your head will be cut. Now the sannyasin thought, I am amongst the lunatics and I cannot even escape. Those naked swords were there all around. And the king said, remember it, I mean business. When I say something, I do it. So be careful. Looking at the cup so full, he could not believe that he will be able to save his head. But there was nothing else he could do. He had to put the cup full of oil and go round the court 7 times. And the dance continued, and the beautiful women continued, and of course he was an old type of sannyasin, deep down very much interested in women. Many times the desire came just to have a look, but the fear of death and those naked swords. He managed 7 rounds. It was almost impossible. Then the king asked, how did you manage? It was impossible. The sannyasin said, I could manage because of these naked swords all around. Death so close I have never felt. Just a foot by my side. Any moment. And the king said, and what about these beautiful women? And I know sannyasins. They may not be interested in anything else, but they are bound to be interested in women. And what about this beautiful, delicious food, and the aroma of the food, and the wine? And these are the things that you have repressed. So they are deep down in your being. They want to surface. The sannyasin laughed. He said, "Who cares about these things when death is so close by?" The king said, "You have learned the lesson. This was the lesson your master has sent you to learn. Remember death. It is closer than those swords. It is always closer than anything else. You are living surrounded by death. And if this can be remembered, this will become the greatest stimulation for meditation, for awareness. Hence the emphasis." Buddha says, death overtakes the man who, giddy and distracted by the world, cares only for his flocks and his children. Death fetches him away as a flood carries off a sleeping village. Don't be a sleeping village. Otherwise, death will come like a flood and you will be gone. Be awake. Be alert. Be mindful. His family cannot save him, not his father, nor his sons. Nobody can save you except your own awareness. Know this. And don't only believe in what the awakened ones say. Know this on your own. Let it become an existential experience. Know this. Seek wisdom and purity. Seek innocence of a child. Drop all your foolish knowledge. All knowledge is foolish. Remember T.S. Eliot again. Where is the life we have lost in living? Where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge we have lost in information? The cycles of heaven in 20 centuries bring us farther from God and nearer to the dust. Where is the wisdom that we have lost in knowledge? Knowledge is a poor substitute for wisdom. Knowledge means borrowed from others. Drop all that which you have taken from others. Wisdom is that which grows in your innocence. When you are just like a small child, full of wonder and awe, mystified by existence, knowing nothing, and wisdom arises. Wisdom wells up within your being. Wisdom is not something that comes from the outside. It is your inner growth. Know this. Seek wisdom and purity. Quickly clear the way. And whatsoever hinders the way for the wisdom to arise, quickly clear it. Remove knowledge, information. Remove all your egoistic trips. Remove desires. Remove memories, imaginations. Remove the whole mind. Become a no mind. That is purity. And in that purity, wisdom blooms. In the lake of that innocence, the lotus of wisdom opens up. And that is the only possible way to be free, to have freedom, ultimate, total. What are you reading? Ask the prison librarian. Nothing much, replied the prisoner. Just the usual escape literature. Enough for today.